This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story.
We have learned to understand many complex things in this modern day, but the complexity of the human mind is something which still baffles us. Oh, sometimes we may get a brief glimpse of its inner workings, as in a glass darkly, but for the most part, it remains our greatest mystery. Especially difficult to understand is the mind which has lost its bearings with its fellow men. In biblical times, they thought such people were beset by devils, to be driven out by incantations. But today we know that men often go mad because they are charged with such grief or emotion that their minds give way beneath the strain. We have a story of such a man and such a mind. A rather obscure story, discovered for us by the famous star and director of Universal International Studios, Mr. Robert Montgomery. As his favorite story, he chose The Strange Mr. Bartleby by Herman Melville, author of Moby Dick. Here's Bob Montgomery's favorite story, Act One.
How do you do? I am an attorney at law. My chambers are in a rather bleak building on Wall Street in the city of New York. I never address a jury or battle the cause of justice in a court of law. My office handles title deeds and wills and such. I'm afraid mine is a rather gloomy, musty office looking out on the brick wall of an adjacent building. Now, you'll say that nothing much can happen in such an office in the way of drama or excitement, and I'm bound to agree with you. But then, I remember a certain man, the man named Bartleby. This all happened in the days before typewriters, when all legal documents were copied by hand. I had one regular copyist, the chap I called Nippers. But the work piled up, so I advertised for another. I'll never forget the morning that motionless man stood in my office. I can see that figure now, pallidly neat, pitiably respectable, incurably forlorn. Your name?
Bartleby.
Yes, but is that your first or your last name?
That is what you may call me, sir.
That's a little strange. Which is it, your first or your last? Won't you tell me?
I would prefer not.
Well, then, what are your qualifications?
I can do the work required.
No, what was your last position?
I have worked for the United States government in Washington for the last 20 years.
In what capacity? What sort of work did you do for the government? Well, I must admit you strike me as a rather secretive chap, Bartleby. But I'm quite urgently in need of a copyist, and I'm willing to give you a try. Will you report in the morning?
If you don't mind, sir, may I start right now?
Well, yes, of course, but don't you want to take the day to straighten out your personal affairs?
I would prefer not.
I must say that at first Bartleby did an extraordinary quantity of writing. He wrote by the hour, silently, mechanically, in a clear, precise hand. On his third day with me, a rather strange thing happened.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Yes, Nippers?
I would like to proofread these titles with someone, sir, and the new clerk, Mr. Bartleby, doesn't even answer me.
Oh, really? Well, we'll attend to that. Bartleby! Bartleby, come in here. There's some material to proofread, and we need your assistance.
I would prefer not.
Prefer not? What do you mean? Are you moonstruck? I want you to help Nippers compare these sheets. Now, here, take these.
I would prefer not.
What?
Why do you refuse?
I would prefer not.
Nippers, start to dictate. Bartleby will check the copy.
Very well, sir. Whereas the Court of Chancery of the State of New York declares...
Bartleby, you are not following the copy.
I would prefer not.
Every copyist is bound to help examine proofs. Don't you know that? Well, answer me. Really, Bartleby, I have no desire to stand here and shout at you like an angry schoolmaster. You've decided, then, not to comply with my request, a request made according to common usage and common sense. Nippers, what do you think of this? Am I not right?
With submission, sir, I think that you are.
You hear what he says. Now do your job.
I would prefer not.
Now, mind you, this man was useful to me as a copyist. He just would not communicate with other human beings. And then I began to observe the strangest things. Bartleby never took a lunch hour. Bartleby was in the office when I left and was the first one there in the morning when I arrived. But didn't the man eat? I began to regard his ways more narrowly. I noticed that every day one of the office boys would bring him a handful of ginger nuts, small little cakes. But could a man live on ginger nuts? Bartleby seemed to. One Sunday morning, I decided to pick up some briefs in my office. Wall Street was deserted as a tomb. It's remarkable how quiet it can get on Sunday. I walked up the dark stairway, put the key in the lock of my office door. When suddenly someone from inside resisted.
Don't come in, please.
Bartleby, is that you?
Yes. I'm very sorry. I'm not fully dressed. I would prefer not admitting you at present.
Bartleby, have you been living in my office?
Living?
Answer me, man. Will you answer me?
I would prefer not.
I left the building. I did not return that day. A great melancholy seized me. I knew then that Bartleby had been making that bleak and barren office his home. Think of it. What loneliness. His poverty must be great, but his solitude, how horrible. This building, which on weekdays hums with industry and life, at nightfall echoes with sheer vacancy, and on Sunday is so quiet it should drive an ordinary man mad. Bartleby. It was like a bit of wreckage afloat in the middle of an ocean. On Monday morning, I determined to have a talk with the man, as gently as I could. Bartleby? Bartleby, come here. I am not going to ask you to do anything you would prefer not to do. I simply wish to speak to you.
Yes?
Won't you sit down?
I would prefer not.
As you wish. Bartleby? Will you tell me something about yourself?
I would prefer not.
But what reasonable objection can you have to speak to me? I feel friendly toward you. What is your answer?
I would prefer not to give an answer at present.
All right, Bartleby. I won't plague you with questions. Never mind about revealing any of your history. But let me entreat you as a friend to comply as far as possible with the usages of this office. Say now you will help examine papers tomorrow or the next day. Say so, Bartleby.
At present, I would prefer not to examine papers.
Prefer not, eh? I'd prefer him if I were you, sir.
Mr. Nippers, I'd prefer that you withdraw for the present.
You see, sir, you have got that word, too.
What word?
I would prefer to be left alone.
That's the word. That's it.
Oh, prefer? Oh, yes, an odd word. I never use it myself. Right now, Nippers, I'd prefer not to... Oh, good Lord.
I'll leave, sir, if you prefer.
He was beginning to do something in my office. There was a pall over it, like living death. One day, when Bartleby was at the far end of the office, away from his desk, I decided I had to investigate. I had to find out something about this man. I went to his desk and started to go through the drawers.
They were empty, completely empty, except for a few crumbs of ginger nuts. When I turned around, there was Bartleby standing staring at me with that unexpressive coldness in his eyes.
Bartleby, I'm sorry. I was looking for... Well, for the love of heaven, this is my desk. I pay for it. This is my office. I pay the rent. There's no reason why I have to apologize to you. Something terrible has happened inside me since the day you walked in here. I have a feeling the place is full of death. You'd better leave.
I would prefer not.
Mind you, I had pity for this man, compassion. I wanted to help him. But talking to him was like talking to the brick wall outside his window. Then the strangest thing of all happened. The titles and deeds I gave him to copy were not turned in. I stopped my work and turned to listen for a sound from his desk. The familiar, even scribbling sound had stopped. Bartleby? Bartleby, where's your work? Bartleby, I'm talking to you. Bartleby! Bartleby, I've been calling you.
Well, have the decency to turn around. Just don't stand there facing that dreary brick wall. Why aren't you working?
I have decided that I will do no more writing.
Do no more writing? What's your reason?
My eyes. Look at my eyes.
They do seem a bit bloodshot. Well, the light is not too good in here. We'll remedy that. You may take a few days off and rest your eyes. This is a hazard of the profession. Why don't you go to the country for the weekend, eh?
I have given up copying.
Even when your eyes get better?
Yes.
In that case, Bartleby, I'm afraid we'll have to part. I'll have no use for you. I'll give you your final check and you may go.
I would prefer not.
I'll be very generous with you, Bartleby. I will give you wages for 2 additional weeks, but you must quit this office. You must leave.
I would prefer not to leave you.
What earthly right do you have to stay here? Do you pay any rent? Do you pay any taxes? I order you, in the name of decency, in the name of the law, to leave this office.
I would prefer not.
We're ready for Act Two of Robert Montgomery's favorite story, The Strange Mr. Bartleby, starring William Conrad as the attorney and Hans Conried as Bartleby. Who is this Bartleby? Why does he cling to this building like a drowning man to a floating log? Well, perhaps we shall find the answer as we turn to Act Two.
Bartleby stayed in my office for weeks. Just stayed there, not working. His presence in the office was hurting my business. He frightened people with his cold, impersonal manner. I just couldn't call the police. It was not in me to commit this man to prison. And on what grounds? I finally hit on a solution. Since he would not quit me, I would quit him. I decided to change my offices. Bartleby, I find these chambers too far from the city hall. In a word, I propose to remove my offices next week and shall no longer require your presence. I tell you this now in order that you may seek another place.
He made no reply. He just looked at me.
On the appointed day, the movers took out all the furniture. Bartleby alone remained in that completely empty office, a mute fixture standing by the window.
Bartleby, I bid you goodbye. I'm going now. I've tried to understand you. I've tried to help you. I've failed. May God, in some way that he alone knows, take care of you.
I thought I had left Bartleby behind me. For 3 whole days, I did not see him. I was settling nicely in my new office when suddenly the door flew open. It was the landlord of the building I had just vacated.
Oh, there you are.
Good day to you, Mr. Cavendish.
It is usually the practice, my dear sir, when you move out of an office to take all of your employees with you.
Oh.
When the new tenant moved in, that man was just standing there. When we asked him in all decency to move, he said he would...
Prefer not.
Yes. We finally got him out of the office by sheer force, but now he haunts the building generally. He sits upon the stairs by day, and he sleeps in the entry at night. Clients are leaving the offices. I'll be ruined.
I'll go to him immediately.
There he is. You see? Like a leech, hanging to the stairway.
I'll see what I can do. Hello, Bartleby. What are you doing here?
Sitting on the staircase.
Bartleby, are you aware that you were the cause of great tribulation to me by staying here after being dismissed from the office? Now come, I will help you find another position.
No. I would prefer not to make any change.
Would you like a clerkship in a store, perhaps?
There's too much confinement about that.
Too much confinement? Well, you keep yourself confined all the time.
I would prefer not to take a clerkship.
Well, then, would you like to travel through the country as a bill collector? That would improve your health.
I like to be stationary.
Well, then, be stationary in prison. I wash my hands of you. I left the building quickly, avoiding the landlord and the incensed tenants. The whole incident unnerved me, so I decided to take a short vacation. When I returned to my office, there was a package there waiting for me. I ripped it open. It was the old suit jacket that Bartleby had worn. That thin, dull coat that had hung around his skinny shoulders. With the jacket, there was a note from the landlord. Your friend, Mr. Bartleby, is now at Tombs Prison. We were forced to send for the police. However, he left this jacket behind on the stairs. We return it to you as his employer. Oh, Bartleby, Bartleby. What made you into the kind of man you are? As I started to put his jacket aside, I noticed a bit of paper in the inside pocket. I removed it. It was an envelope, a very old envelope. The postmark was blurred, but I could see that it was Washington, D.C. And the date was some 18 years ago. It was addressed to Miss Helen Underwood at a street number in Chicago. That address was scratched out, and a half dozen others were scrawled over it in its place. The envelope was covered with rubber-stamped messages. Not here, gone, no forwarding address given. Until finally at the bottom of the tattered envelope was another rubber stamp message. Refer to Post Office Department 49, attention, Mr. Bartleby. I looked inside. The envelope was empty. I had to help Bartleby. He was a riddle inside my head that had to be solved. This envelope, this poor crumpled envelope, was the only clue I had to his past. So I decided to go to Washington. Perhaps he had a friend, a relative. Perhaps his past would be the key to this man's mind. I beg your pardon. Can you tell me where I can find Department 49, please?
Basement.
Thank you.
It's just a matter. What do you want to go down there for?
It's a personal matter.
Well, you can go down if you like, only I wouldn't advise it.
Why? What section of the post office is 49?
Go on, have a look. You'll find out soon enough.
I climbed down the musty stairs of the old post office building. The air had a clammy feeling. All my spirits seemed to descend with me. I came into a large, low-ceilinged room.
All around, stacked high, were letters. At the far end of the room was a furnace, its mouth laughing at the room.
Yes, young man?
I whirled around. An old man stood at my side.
What can I do for you?
I come on an errand of mercy. Do you know a man named Bartleby?
Bartleby.
Has he worked here?
He worked here.
What is this place?
The post office of the United States government.
No, no, this room, this department.
Can't you tell? Look around you. This is the end of the line. The dead letter office.
Oh, I see.
You are a friend of Bartleby's?
I was his employer. I come only to see what happened to Bartleby's mind that makes him so sad, so odd, so lacking in hope.
For 20 years, Bartleby's job was opening letters here in this room to see if their contents could identify the sender or the addressee.
Oh.
Dead letters, young man. Dead letters. Doesn't that sound like dead men? Imagine this, if you can. The accumulated sorrow of a nation passes through this cellar. Can any business in all the world give a man more hopelessness than handling these letters and sorting them for the flames? We burn them by the cartload.
Oh, Bartleby. Bartleby.
I used to watch his eyes as he opened the letters. Sometimes out of the folded paper he would take a ring. The finger it was meant for, perhaps molded in the grave. Another letter, a banknote, sent in swiftest charity, but the man whom it would relieve neither eats nor hungers anymore. Another still, a lost son to a lost mother, but lost forever to each other, here in our cellar, here in our flames. Look, open a few of these, young men. Oh, on errands of life, these letters speed to death.
One question, please. Do you know of a person named Helen Underwood? Perhaps a friend of Bartleby's.
Helen Underwood? Yes. It was the one letter that Bartleby himself wrote in all those years. And a long, long time afterwards, that letter came back here to him. Unopened, unanswered, like all the others.
There he is, still sleeping. The silent man, that's what we call him.
Thank you.
If you're a friend of his, you might be able to get him to go off this hunger strike. He hasn't eaten a bite all week. You know, the doc says he's dying.
Oh. Would you leave me alone with him for just a few minutes, please?
Help yourself. He'll probably tell you he prefers not to do something.
Bartleby.
I know you.
It was not I who had you brought here to prison, Bartleby. I've come to help you. Now, first of all, you must eat.
I would prefer not to eat.
Bartleby, I know what's the matter with you. Now, listen to me. You're sick, but it's not hopeless, Bartleby. No, don't turn away. Please, don't go back to sleep, Bartleby. There are new sciences, new doctors who can help you. Bartleby, do you hear me? Listen to me. You must live. You must live.
I would prefer not.
Bartleby.
Can't get anything out of him, huh? Still asleep, ain't he?
Yes, asleep. Don't try to wake him. He would prefer not.
You've heard The Strange Mr. Bartlemy, a most remarkable short story by Herman Melville, dramatized and directed by Jerome Lawrence and Robert Lee. William Conrad was the attorney, and Hans Conried was the tragic and terrified Bartleby. Claude Sweeten composed and conducted the score. And Mr. Robert Montgomery selected The Strange Mr. Bartleby as his own favorite story. We count it as quite a discovery, the kind of unusual drama that we're proud to bring you in this half hour. Next week, I shall have the pleasure of bringing to the favorite story microphones James Hilton's Lost Horizon. Miss Mary Pickford has selected it as her favorite. And I've promised Mary that once again I would make that perilous and dramatic journey to Shangri-La. So when we spend a half hour next week at the Lamasery in the Valley of the Blue Moon, we hope you'll be listening.